You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Arkansas-Mississippi State's a day away. We'll preview it today along with other SEC games. Plus, we'll talk about the latest nuttiness in coaching searches around the country. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
I think it's important to keep an eye on what's going on around college football in terms of coaching searches as Arkansas is in the middle of one of its own. One thing that I take away from what has happened already, and keep in mind, it's only Halloween. Like, it's so weird. It feels like we are in the midst of coaching search season, and we have like we're still over a month away from the conference championship games. It's just so different this year how teams are doing things. But the big takeaway to this point, Ethan Westerman's in studio with me, is that if you expected the coaching market to change this offseason, it ain't happening. Look at what Indiana's done with their 10-year contract for Kurt Cignetti. Nebraska, they've lost their mind and tied up Matt Rhule through the 2030s. You got this whole thing going on in Louisiana that I want to get to with what's happening with LSU. But, you know, like with Rhule and with Cignetti, well, what happens? I heard it in Nebraska yesterday. It was, oh, well, it would cost everybody $15 million to buy him out now, so he isn't going anywhere this year. You realize that guy has an 18-15 record at Nebraska. I know they're 6-2 this year. He hasn't beaten a ranked opponent since he's been there. Not beating ranked opponents, having a record right around 500, that's not going to cut it for very long at Nebraska. And so, you know, you wonder about Nebraska. Did you just handcuff yourself to somebody that you're going to have to pay $50, $60 million somewhere in the, you know, somewhat near future to break away from? I just cannot understand why, in light of Penn State and LSU and what the Louisiana governor's comments were this week, why these schools continue to just get themselves in this cycle that they cannot get out of as it pertains to coaches' buyouts. I don't have any problem with them giving their coaches a contract extension. I think Kurt Cignetti has more than earned a contract extension at Indiana. But, you know, what's happening is that the extensions and the buyouts and everything, it's just the same as it's always been. And so for everybody else that's hiring coaches this offseason, Arkansas being one of them, you're stuck in that market too, and you're probably going to have to overpay for a coach, especially relative to what it might have looked like 3 years ago.
The programs continue to kind of handcuff themselves by doing this. It just seems like such a move that isn't concerned with the future very well. It's because we've seen all too often how these big buyouts really handcuff a program down the road whenever things don't work out. And I just think it's unfortunate for programs like Arkansas that are now into the same market to where it's almost like who's going to be the cheapest? Mm. Who's going to decide that they are not going to pay as much in this market where you really have to pay a lot?
I don't know that Arkansas is going to go after the cheapest coach. I'm not sure I agree with that. But it is unfortunate for, like say, Arkansas, where they waited on Sam Pittman, and I think one of the reasons they waited on Sam Pittman was to see if the buyout would go down. That buyout, that's a big deal here. And that's not to say that there aren't people that are affiliated with the program who can't come in and save the day and say, hey, I'll take care of that or I'll take care of part of that. But it's a bigger deal here than I think it is at other schools. But, you know, when you're out there and you're trying to get the same type of coaches that a Penn State or an LSU or whoever is trying to get, and you're having to deal with the same, it is unfortunate because mentioned this earlier in the week, you know, Arkansas, they're in shark-infested waters. Do they have the mindset to swim with the other sharks? Because it's very much, it's either eat or be eaten. And at this point in time, I don't know that I've seen Arkansas, you know, have that shark-like mentality when it comes to football. Does that change this offseason? I don't know. Maybe it has to in order to get the type of coach that they think they need.
Yeah, and I think it's good to remember, too, that in these types of coaching searches, It's only going to get crazier because, I mean, let's think about Arkansas's last basketball coaching search, for instance. Eric Musselman leaving for, or actually, we can even go a step ahead with USC's coach leaving USC. It sets off a whole new, you know, set of dominoes for other programs where jobs open. And it's like this football coaching carousel, there's going to be some coach leave his current program that opens up his job. And then you've got even more programs that are in the same boat that are going to be able to be a big money player, I think. It's just this coaching search is going to get even wilder because there's going to be more jobs open based on coaches getting fired and then also coaches leaving for some of these openings. So it's going to be interesting to see as more of these jobs open with programs like, you know, I know Auburn's been floated out there. I don't know if that's going to happen, but
if they lose to Kentucky this weekend, it might.
For sure. There's a lot of programs, you know, of that caliber of like an Auburn or somebody who that could open up, and all of a sudden it makes Arkansas even more competing with programs that are going to pony up, I feel like, and be kind of the sharks in that ocean. If there's one thing we know, if it's this crazy by October 31st, boy, it's going to just get a little bit crazier.
So there's always that team, or sometimes there's multiple teams that they just look crazy during the coaching search. And this year, that's LSU. Mm-hmm. It's what's happened down there in the last few days. Their governor, Jeff Landry, had what I would just call an unhinged press conference a couple of days ago. And I think he has potentially sunk LSU's chances of getting a high-quality head coach to come in there after they fired Brian Kelly. You know, LSU, everybody says that this is one of the very best jobs in the country. Some people may even say it's the best job in the country when you think about access or proximity to recruits, fan support, everything that goes into that. Obviously, it's a really great program. But you got to be willing to have everybody in alignment. And right now, I mean, they look like that guy that comes into the chiropractor's office who can't walk straight and can barely take, you know, two steps because they're so out of alignment. They don't have a university president. They've got a governor who was obviously in you know, crossways with other people in the athletic administration. They fire their AD. I mean, if you're a head coach and you're looking at LSU right now, let's say you're Lane Kiffin because he's the hot name. He's who everybody says that LSU is going to want to go target. Like, do you really want to go there when you have things here at Ole Miss, or you might have another job elsewhere where things are more in alignment? Like, people talk about Ole Miss and why they're successful right now. I think that a lot of it has to do with alignment. They've got an AD in Keith Perry, who's from Arkansas, with Lane Kiffin, and you know, they've certainly got a collective that has been at the forefront of being really good in the sport. So there's an alignment at Ole Miss, and I think that's one of the reasons that they're successful. You look at Vanderbilt. Hey, why is Vanderbilt doing non-Vanderbilt things right now? I think there's an alignment there with their AD and their head coach and others within that university. And at LSU, I don't see that. I feel like whoever steps into that situation stepping into something that's really weird. And, you know, so we don't know necessarily what the alignment is at Arkansas. But it certainly feels like if you're at least let's say this, let's say if I'm a big time coach and I've got the crazy LSU people over here kicking my tires that are not in alignment, and maybe I see a job that's less attractive on the surface, maybe that job is more attractive to me if I get in there and I can see that internally things are working a lot less chaotically than they are for this job that everybody else just, you know, at first blush says is the best one.
For sure. I mean, if you're keeping up with this LSU situation right now, like, who really wants to step into that craziness where you feel like the governor and everybody else is going to get involved? And if things aren't going the way that, you know, that he wants, he's going to get his way or whatever. LSU women played an exhibition last night, and Kim Mulkey wouldn't do her press conference because she said she was so heartbroken by Woodward or
Scott Woodward
getting fired. Yeah. I mean, he's who hired her there. He was at A&M prior, right?
Yeah,
for a while. Well,
that's part of the knock against him is that
yeah,
he hired Jimbo Fisher to A&M. Now there is a little bit of misinformation, I guess, out there. Yes, he did hire Jimbo Fisher, and yes, he gave Jimbo Fisher a big buyout. But about 2 or 3 years into Jimbo Fisher's tenure at A&M, their next AD, Ross Bjork, who's now at Ohio State, he gave him a contract extension and basically reset that 10-year clock. So Woodward and Bjork kind of co-share the burden, the blame, whatever you want to call it, there at A&M with what happened with Jimbo. But you look at the two biggest buyouts in college football history, the guy who hired both of those coaches was Scott Woodward.
Yeah, so not a good look there. By the way, speaking of ADs, I think you called him Keith Perry because he's from Perryville.
Keith Carter.
Yeah, no, I caught it in real time. I was like, I think you were just getting Perryville mixed up.
I've been through Perryville a few times.
I have too. I think the Mustangs is what they are. But yeah, no, you look at that situation for Elaine Kiffin right now, and it really is like things are going well there. And it's like, what entices a coach to uproot something that's, I mean, you're ranked 7th in the nation right now. It's not like you can't win at Ole Miss, clearly. And that's where you get to the point of like, what can entice a coach to actually just come out of a current situation that is good and go into one that could be great, but you also might deal with a lot of craziness like this.
Like, I think Penn State, they would be considered crazy too.
Yeah.
James Franklin took him to the national semifinals last year, and you run him out of town less than a year later. I wonder how those jobs, because again, if you poll just about anybody and say, hey, what are the best jobs open right now? Well, it's LSU, it's Penn State, it's Florida, but those also are the jobs that just kind of have some of the nuttiest expectations too. And if you're a coach, does that matter to you? Like if you're James Franklin, because he's certainly going to go somewhere this offseason, or at least it looks like he's going to, do you want to go back and put yourself in another pressure cooker like the one you just were able to get out of? Or do you want to go somewhere where they appreciate if you win 9 or 10 games in a season and they don't necessarily say, well, you know, why didn't you win 11? I think that could be – that's just something to watch as we go forward here in these coaching searches, whether or not that makes an amount of difference to these coaches who are the big names.
Yeah, and it's just – there's such different ends of the spectrum where there's these schools that are so reactionary, it feels like, all the time. And then there's ones like Arkansas that people have a knock against Juracek for not pulling the plug on Sam earlier. It's just like there's two ends of the spectrum right now, I think, of programs that are so reactionary and do stuff that gets them in a bad situation with buyouts. And there's programs like Arkansas, you're like, did you wait too long? Did you miss a window where you could have really been one of the top jobs in the nation?
People thought Arkansas was crazy the last time the job came open because they had not given Chad Morris 2 full years. So, again, sometimes perception is reality. Sometimes it is not. Moving on, Arkansas is going to play Mississippi State at 3 o'clock tomorrow. The game's going to be on SEC Network, and if you have YouTube TV, you may not get to watch the game. This is not a promotion for like anybody else, but it's just kind of a PSA. In case you haven't heard, YouTube is at odds with Disney. Disney's pulled all of their programming off of YouTube TV. You know, I think that there are a lot of cord cutters out there, Ethan, who naively thought that, hey, whenever I get away from a cable or I get away from DirecTV or whoever your provider was, and I go to one of these streaming services, I'm not going to have to worry about these carriage disputes anymore. And I've told people, it's like, just wait, it's coming. And now here it is with YouTube. And this is the biggest streaming provider, internet-based TV provider in the country. There's over 10, or right at about 10 million subscribers, I think, to YouTube TV, based on what I read this morning. And here you are going into a big college football Saturday. They're all big. No ABC, no ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, SEC, ACC Network. They're all dark right now. We'll see if it changes before kickoff tomorrow. The common denominator in these carriage disputes is Disney. It's always, I should say it's always Disney, because sometimes you have, you know, Nexstar or somebody is at the heart of this too. But typically it's Disney trying to charge more for its content. And I find it interesting. Did you read earlier this week that Disney already owns Hulu? They bought the majority stake in Hulu, or I think the sole stake in Hulu earlier.
That's why I am a Hulu person, so I know I'm not going to get a blackout.
Then this week, they merge with Fubo, and now all of a sudden, it just seems kind of ironic that in the same week that they merge these two streaming providers together to create what's basically the second largest in the country, now the largest streaming provider can't get Disney access. That's a little fishy, I would say, to me.
I hate that it feels like it's slowly morphing into like this monopoly with Disney, to where they just have all this power to do everything and get their way, and it just kind of stinks. I know a whole lot of my friends watch college football on YouTube TV. It's a very popular, like, because you can do the whole like multi-box, the quad box. So this stinks, and I hope that something gets figured out, because that's just frustrating. But yeah, no, as a person who has Hulu, I'm not really worried about losing my ESPN right now.
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna have to worry about that one, because they're kind of
they're literally the same company.
They're bedfellows, so to speak. I've said this several times. I really hated that the SEC went totally exclusive to Disney when they did this a few years ago, and that TV contract goes through, I think, 2034. I just feel like the NFL, NBA, I think Major League Baseball is on the path to doing this. The leagues that work the best are the ones who have a footprint with everybody.
The Big Ten does a good job of this.
Big Ten, yeah, they've done a great job, because they've got Fox, they've got CBS, they've got NBC.
Yeah.
I think the SEC made a mistake. I've said this a lot of times. I think they made a mistake when they went exclusively to Disney, was it, 2-3 years ago when they made that call.
Yeah, and what makes it so just frustrating, I think, for all other conferences too, is that like ESPN is also what houses like, you know, college football playoff stuff and all this stuff, that it just makes it, because the SEC is so married with Disney and ESPN, no wonder people like it are going to have questions whenever the SEC is getting a record number of teams in this in the playoff, or record number of teams this, record number of teams that. It just looks so fishy.
And
always,
you know, I sat in on the Board of Trustees meeting last month, and they talked about, hey, our projected revenues are expected to do this and this and this. And one of the big reasons is because we're going to get an increased payout from the SEC, and we're going to get an increased payout from the college football playoff. And at, you know, at first blush, you say, oh, well, that's nice. But then you start thinking about, hey, what does this look like in my own economic reality? It means your TV prices are about to go right through the roof.
Yep.
Again. I mean, they already have. And I don't see that slowing down. The cost to, you know, the cost to sit there and watch games at home is still so much lower than it is to actually, you know, get out and go to the game. But eventually they're going to get their money from you. You know, they figured out, hey, you know, people aren't coming to the games as much as they did, and a lot of it's because they can watch it at home and have maybe even a better experience at home than they can have coming to the game. But they're going to find a way to get that money out of you at some point, and that's what's happening here. I mean, it looks like a total, I don't know if extortion is the right word, but you know, certainly what's going to happen here is that YouTube and Disney are going to come to some sort of agreement. YouTube's going to lose a ton of subscribers as a result of this, and then the people who stick around, your TV rates are about to go up.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, because there's always, like, after every single SEC weekend, the SEC or somebody affiliated will put out something of all the TV ratings for the weekend, and the SEC games just blew everything out of the water. And I'm like, I think that's because we've kind of, with the way that Disney is, pigeonholed a lot of people, and that they can only really, like, they're paying just for that. And it's like people don't have a way to watch, and other than like your YouTube TV people who will be able to watch all the different games. I think a lot of people are in a hole right now where they, especially with this whole new like restructuring of ESPN, whatever it's called.
It's just the ESPN app. It's a direct-to-consumer.
But they had the new package
this
past year that I think a lot of people forked up that money just to watch ESPN. And now, yeah, I personally don't have a way to watch a whole lot of games that go on either, because of just the way it's all set up. And it feels like you have to have a subscription for 5 different things if you want to actually watch what you want
to
watch.
You have to have a subscription to your subscription.
Exactly.
That's kind of what it feels like. Hey, real quick, before we move on and keep talking about Razorback football, women's basketball had an exhibition last night, beat UFAS 142. At Bud Walton Arena. Anything you took away from that?
Yeah, had they not turned it over and made free throws, it could have been 142 to something. But they're ahead defensively. I think obviously you're playing a D2 team, so you should have a good defensive performance. You could just tell they're just connected well on defense. They're moving well. They're good communication, good in help side. They're picking up teams in full court too, which is interesting to see. It's not like a true full court press. It's just pick up the ball handler and make them work full court. They have a freshman named Bonnie Dees, who's from Australia, who's going to be great. she's going to be really good. And she's a great defender. So that's what stood out from their exhibition was they're a step ahead defensively right now. You can't make any conclusions about the offensive style working whenever you're playing a team like that. I mean, you should score a lot of points. But we're in an era right now where there were a couple of D2 over power conference upsets in exhibitions. With Missouri lost to Maryville, a D2 from inside the same state. And then I forget who Arizona lost to, but they lost to a D2. So I think, you're just supposed to handle business. And that's what they did. It would have been very embarrassing to have a close game like those other two teams did or lose. But they beat UFIS pretty handily. They're playing with a lot of excitement, which is something that I think that fans appreciated last night.
I feel the need to clarify UFIS as UA Fort Smith. When I came to college, everybody who grew up in Western Arkansas, I think, or at least in that area, they called UA Fort Smith UFIS. Mm-hmm. The number of people, whenever I got to college, and even in years since, who did not know what I meant when I said UFIS, it kind of astounds me. And you have to go back and kind of remember that, I guess that's maybe kind of a regional dialect, so to speak.
And then there's some people call it, did it used to be called West Ark?
Yeah, West Ark Community
College. Yeah, there's some people who call it West Ark now.
My dad still calls it West Ark.
Yeah, that's whenever I don't know what they're talking about, but I call it, I've always called it UFIS.
There's a lot of great Razorback basketball players who went through West Ark and came up to the U of A. Just kind of a little aside there. A lot of great Razorback basketball players who came from junior college, period. Mm-hmm. Bob Holt and I put something together during the COVID shutdown in 2020 when you're just trying to find feature stories to get you through the 6 months when there's no sports. And one of the things we did was that we looked at all the great – we actually put together like a first team, a second team, and a third team of great Razorback basketball players who went to junior college first. And there were actually some really good players who didn't make the top 15. Just kind of an interesting little aside there. So Razorback women, they start their season next week. Arkansas-Mississippi State, you were surprised that Arkansas is a 5.5-point betting line favorite. And you made the comment to me, Ethan, you said that, you know, for you, you just need to see them prove it. But I think Mississippi State's in the same boat. I mean, this is a team that hasn't won an SEC game since they came to Fayetteville in 2023. Just to put this in perspective, Mississippi State's last SEC win, Dan Enos was still an offensive coordinator in the SEC. It was the day before he got fired here at Arkansas. So think about how much everything has changed since that time. Mississippi State, I think of two things when I think about them. Number one, in the here and now, they look a lot like Arkansas in terms of, not necessarily schematically, but in terms of they're right there to win games. I mean, they had Texas in overtime. They had Tennessee in overtime. They had both of those teams down on their home field in Starkville. They probably should have or could have won a game against Florida in the Swamp a couple, 3 weeks back. But they're finding ways to lose games. And you could say the same thing about Arkansas. They're finding ways to lose games. I think Mississippi State has been closer to having a breakthrough than Arkansas has, because even though Arkansas has kept the games close in a lot of situations, they were trying to catch up at Ole Miss. They were trying to catch up at Tennessee. They were trying to catch up to Texas A&M. Mississippi State's blown some leads. So that's the first thing I think about. The other thing is Brett Bielema's first couple of years, Arkansas lost, I think he got up to a 17-game SEC losing streak when you counted John L. Smith's seasons in there too. I think Brett lost his first 13 SEC games, and they just kept having their heart ripped out. I mean, their last game in that losing streak was at Mississippi State. It's a close game. That's the week that Mississippi State's number one in the first ever college football playoff poll. Close game. Dak Prescott throws a 69-yard touchdown in the fourth quarter. Arkansas gets down inside the red zone at the end of the game. I think Brandon Allen got intercepted in the end zone, and that was that. There were so many games in those first couple of years under Brett especially where it just felt like, how much longer is this going to last? But then when they got through it, they beat LSU on a frigid cold night here, 17-0. Ole Miss came in the next week. They beat them 30-0 in the rain, and there was a little bit of momentum. They were a pretty good team in 2015, I think in part because of what had happened in 2014. And so with both of these teams, you wonder, is there a breakthrough if they can win this weekend? Like, does they win this weekend in Fayetteville for either Arkansas or Mississippi State? Does it maybe kickstart a final month that looks a lot different from a result perspective than what you've seen to this point?
Yeah, and that's where I get, you know, questioning why the line is this way. Because I just feel like if you're asking me which team could win this weekend and then they get hot at the end of the year and rattle together some wins like that Arkansas team you're mentioning, I would say Mississippi State. I mean, they're a more complete football team at this point. Arkansas always has one side of the ball that isn't doing its job, and it doesn't. There's no reason to believe that they're going to get a great offensive and a great defensive performance until they do it. I think Mississippi State, you're sitting here saying there's no reason to believe we aren't going to make the play that screws up the game until we do it. But I'd take that option over a whole side of the ball not being competent for a game. That's where I'm at with Arkansas. And I think that Mississippi State has been right there enough to where they know that it's a them thing, that they're making a goofy mistake that they can win a game. I think Arkansas, it's like, are we that good enough on defense to be able to, and then last week on offense, to play a game that gets us a chance to win? It's just like, it felt like in even the close losses Arkansas's had, they're always, yeah, like you said, always a little bit of a catch-up factor. It's never like how Mississippi State it's been, where they've been in control. They were in control against Texas, Tennessee for a little bit, and they had a really good chance against Florida. I mean, you don't turn it over inside the 4-30 yard line, and you probably win that game.
Like a 340-pound lineman intercepted them and killed their chances. That's when it's like, when will this ever end?
Exactly. And I just think that Arkansas right now, it's surprising to me that they're a favorite. I think this is a toss-up, and whoever loses, oh my goodness, the fan base is going to feel terrible. Because whichever team loses, it is bleak for the rest of the year. You look at Mississippi State's schedule, I think they have Missouri, Georgia, and Ole Miss. Arkansas's, you know, LSU, Texas, Missouri. It's a string of ranked games for both teams.
This may be a really important game for if Jeff Lebby gets to stay at Mississippi State. Remember, this is a program, and they've had some different administrators in there. But, you know, they fired I forget the guy's name. He was there for a couple of years, offensive coordinator. It'll come back to me. They fired him after 2 years. You know, they hired Zach Arnett to replace Mike Leach. He had been their defensive coordinator. I think that was kind of an emotional decision. Moorhead, I think Joe Moorhead was the coach who I was thinking about. But Zach Arnett, they fired him after 1 year. So it's been a school that's not real shy about letting somebody go quickly. State of Mississippi, going back to buyouts, unless it's changed as of a year or so ago, they had a thing in the state of Mississippi where you could not have a coach, any state employee, on a contract of longer than 4 years. And so that really helps bring down the buyout amounts that they would be facing either, you know, at Mississippi State or at Ole Miss. But yeah, I mean, with the teams they got left, they got, like you said, Georgia and then Missouri and then Ole Miss and the Egg Bowl. This is their most winnable game. And I don't know that there's an SEC coach out there who can go 2 years without an SEC win and really feel secure about his job status.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting at. That whoever loses this game, like, number one, the coaching situation. I mean, Petrino already losing to Auburn really hurt his chances. I think all of us can agree on that.
I think so.
You lose to Mississippi State, and I'm willing to say, like, it would take, like, sweeping the last three and making everybody feel great because you beat LSU, Missouri, and Texas, teams that you hate. But I think for Lebby, if you drop this game, I mean, that's really hard to recover from for the rest of this year, because you are staring down the tunnel of perhaps not winning an SEC game in your first two seasons, and that's hard to recover from anywhere. I mean, even Vanderbilt, I don't think that's easy to recover from.
Going back to Auburn last week, first off, on defense, I think Arkansas's defense is playing better. And they're not playing great by any stretch of the imagination, but I think they're playing better since all of the coaching changes. And obviously, it wasn't just Sam Pittman. It was overhauling the defensive staff midseason. They were not good against Texas A&M. I thought they played well enough against Tennessee and against Auburn that if you have a little bit better – if you don't have the turnovers, basically, you may win those games. Turnovers really put the defense in a tough spot against Auburn, put them in a tough spot a time or two against Tennessee too. So I think the defense is actually playing better, even though the numbers, you know, what what we're looking at numbers-wise is really influenced by the bad game against Texas A&M, but also those really bad games that happened before the coaching search. So, and I wonder last week with Auburn, or in the Auburn game, if they have Cam Ball, who I think was out with a concussion. They haven't said specifically, but you know, that's been reported elsewhere that he was out in concussion protocol. If they have him, does it slow Auburn down in their run game? I think it might. You know, I don't know that he's a great player, but I think he's a good enough player that maybe he changes some of that. And then you know, with Arkansas offensively, I think Taylen Green was not feeling well last week, and I don't know that how much that affected the offensive play, but you know, we know that he was dealing with the knee injury. I think there might have been something else going on there, and so they say that he's looked a lot different in practice. He's been a lot more, what was the word used during the, I don't know if upbeat was the right word, but basically that the practices have just looked a lot better this week, a lot cleaner than they did going into that Auburn game. I'm going to pick Arkansas to win. A little spoiler alert for our predictions later. I felt going into this three-game homestand, and I'm going to stick with this, I thought they could win at least one game. And honestly, they could have won the last two. It just didn't break their way. I think there's a chance it breaks their way this weekend. And like you said, it's a coin flip. It's a toss-up because one of these teams is going to have a breakthrough this weekend. It's just a matter of who does it. And in my mind, why not the home team?
Yeah, it is funny that we're in a situation where it's like, well, one of you has to win. So it's some team is going to get at least a tiny bit of medicine this weekend.
I wrote in my prediction thing for the newspaper. It reminds me of the old Oaklawn slogan, somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to win this weekend between Arkansas and Mississippi State. All right, we'll step away for just a moment. Another word from Kendall King, and then we'll be back with our predictions.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, you can look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville, or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. We had a great time yesterday at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club with the Razorback baseball assistant coaches there. I've heard feedback from a lot of people that they really enjoyed that. If you haven't caught that, I would encourage you to go back one day on our podcast, whether you're watching us on YouTube or listening to us on Apple or Spotify. Just go back to yesterday's show, and you can hear that roundtable discussion with Matt Hobbs, Nate Thompson, and Bobby Wernis. There was a lot there to unpack from them, but I tell you, the one thing that stood out to me, Ethan, was toward the end when I asked Matt Hobbs to reflect back on Gage Woods' no-hitter at the World Series, and he had a great quote, and I don't know if I've got this verbatim, but the essence of his quote, because I had talked to him about, there was talk going into that game against Murray State whether or not Arkansas was going to start Gage Wood or they were going to start a left-hander based on the matchups. Murray State hit right-handers a lot better than they hit left-handers, about 44 points, if I remember correctly. And he had a great quote yesterday, though. He said, "We coach people, not pieces of paper." And I tell you, that was just that was the one that really stood out to me from yesterday.
Yeah, it also stood out on that same note. He said, "I'm not going to have our season come to an end knowing that I left my first round MLB draft pick just in the dugout."
Yep.
Like, I mean, and that was pretty powerful because it just goes to show that, like, yeah, there's so much in sports that comes down to analytics. They're very popular. They can be a tool, but coaches have to be in tune with their players. And because sometimes the analytics aren't the answer. Sometimes it's what you know as a coach about your player, about who's going to be able to rise up to the occasion, who you trust in the situation. And so that was cool to hear him talk about.
There's an intuitiveness about being a successful coach. And I think it's especially true in a sport like baseball or even softball, like you cover a lot. Just kind of knowing your players and knowing where they're at, you know, from in terms of their mental approach, where they're at in terms of rest. That goes, I mean, it goes a long way toward being successful.
Which is why whenever softball last year, I will to this day say I think that they would have made the World Series had their two top pitchers not gotten food poisoning before game one of their super regional.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, Courtney, I know she's a coach that goes by kind of a lot of times her gut with who should be in their pitching. I was like, what a weird decision to not start your ace in game one of it. And then lo and behold, they had two of them out. It's just funny because she has a good feeler for that. Sometimes pitching somebody that I'm not expecting, but that was a case of me like, wow, what a weird time to have that. But no, it was food poisoning. And I still think, yeah, they would have made their first College World Series had they had their pitchers available.
That whole gut feeling thing, that's a good segue into predictions. You know, sometimes it's you just look at the matchup on paper, and sometimes you have to go by your gut. And so I know we're going to disagree on some stuff here. We'll start around the SEC. Number 9, Vanderbilt, is at number 20, Texas. Tomorrow it's going to be an 11 o'clock kickoff on ABC. Vandy 7-1, Texas 6-2. They're both 3-1 in the SEC, and they both still could make it to Atlanta for the conference championship game, which I think that surprises a lot of people to learn that Texas is still, I mean, they kind of, as much as I hate the term control their own destiny, they kind of do as it relates to getting to Atlanta, especially the fact that they get to end the season with Texas A&M. Texas is a 3.5-point favorite in this game. That is with some uncertainty about Arch Manning and whether or not he's going to be able to play. He was in concussion protocol after their game last week. Our efficiency ratings like Vanderbilt by 6. What say you, Ethan?
I'm not picking against Vanderbilt anytime now, especially with Texas, all that you mentioned with Arch Manning and some of the uncertainty there. I think Vanderbilt's just been very complete all year, and you don't find that much in the SEC this year. It feels like most teams have one real deficiency. Vanderbilt's been pretty complete. They're, quite frankly, I think had they a few things gone differently in the fourth quarter against Alabama, could be undefeated right now, and that's an Alabama team that's playing well. I'm going to pick Vanderbilt in this one again. I'm going to keep on riding the Pavia train until it somehow crashes.
Yeah, I think they were down, 8 points midway through the fourth quarter, maybe 9 points against Alabama, and then the game kind of got away from them over the last couple of possessions. I say this all the time with Vanderbilt. I'm so impressed by the way that they play just good complementary football, where they've got an offense that is able to limit the number of possessions for the opposing offense, even if it doesn't end in a touchdown. A lot of times they're not a 3-and-out team by any stretch of the imagination. And even if Manning were playing, I think Vanderbilt may have the quarterback edge in this game with the way that Diego Pavia has been playing. I know he didn't have a great game last week against Missouri, but when he's on, he's a game breaker. And I'm picking Vanderbilt too. It's weird because they're Vanderbilt, but I think Vanderbilt's the better of these two teams. The other thing I would say is that Texas, the last 2 weeks, they're very fortunate that they didn't have a loss against two of the winless SEC teams. Kentucky and Mississippi State both took them to overtime.
Yeah, I think it's a sign of the times, too, with Vanderbilt, that you can be a really good team this year in the SEC just by being pretty good at a lot of things. You don't, like, I think in the past you're looking at a lot of teams like your Georgia, your Alabama, that they're just so dominant defensively. They're pretty dang good offensively too. You look at Vanderbilt this year, they're like not even in the top 5 in SEC in total defense or total offense, but they're hovering around that 6, 7, 8. Like, they're good enough on both sides of the ball, and I think they're scoring offense. So even without having a total offense that's like in the top 5, I think they're maybe 6th in the SEC in total offense. They're 2nd in scoring offense. So they're just a team that's been able to, I don't know, they've been good enough both offensively and defensively. Although I think potentially some team could really expose them in the run game. But it's really yet to happen. I like Vanderbilt. It's hard to pick against them.
Moving forward, 6:30 kickoff on SEC Network. Kentucky goes to Auburn. This is like maybe Yuck Bowl 1 in the SEC this weekend. Kentucky 2-5, 0-5 in the SEC. Auburn 4-4, 1-4 in the SEC. Auburn's a 10.5-point favorite. Our ratings like Auburn by 4. And one of the questions is, does the loser of this game, the head coach that loses this game, is he still around next week? I mean, there's been firings about every Sunday this season, and Mark Stoops and Hugh Freeze both feel like they're on the hot seat.
What a 2-week stretch for Hugh Freeze. to have, you need to dodge a bullet at Arkansas, and now you need to dodge a bullet against Kentucky and see where it takes you. Yeah, this is, I know Mississippi State Arkansas is 0-8 combined SEC. This Kentucky Auburn is 1-9 combined, so both yuck bowls. I think this is the uglier yuck bowl, though, because this is a, which offense, like, you know, we say Mississippi State and Arkansas, one of these teams has to win. Kentucky Auburn, I'm like, one of these offenses has to do better than the other, I guess. Both defenses not bad, but man.
No, I think Kentucky's defense is bad.
Okay, well, they've
got a reputation for being good under Stoops. They're not very good this year.
It's probably fallen off some as the season's progressed. Early in the year, they were actually playing pretty good defensively. I guess that they have let go of the metaphorical rope. But, yeah, I mean, I'm going to pick Auburn in this one because their defense is good enough that if they had an offense, they'd be really good this year.
I wonder about Auburn with their quarterback situation and just like what the dynamics are within the team when you're tinkering with your quarterback going into November the way they're doing. I'll pick Auburn because they're at home. But this is one of those games where, you know, if you text me at 9:30 tomorrow night, like, hey, look over at SEC Network, you see what Kentucky's doing to Auburn, I don't know that I'd be too surprised by that.
Yeah, it's going to be a gross one. We know that much. The forecast is 100% chance of gross.
All right, that's a good one. We're not going to pick an SEC upset, but we'll pause here real quick. How about an upset in a top 25 game this weekend? What are you looking at?
I kind of went back and forth with a few of these. I think I'm going to stick with my initial gut one, which was Virginia at Cal. We have a 15th-ranked Virginia team that I think is really riding the coattails that they beat a Florida State team that hasn't proven to be that great.
Right.
And they also beat Louisville, not a bad team. But they've had some close calls in there, too. They beat North Carolina by 1 last week. They beat Washington State by 2. That Louisville win was a 3-point win. They lost to NC State early. I just don't think this is a Virginia team that's as good as their 15th ranking. I don't think Cal's that great either, but that's a tricky game always. We're seeing this whenever you go from East Coast to West Coast. Mm-hmm. And I think that Cal, I just think this is a game that Virginia, it's finally going to catch up to them playing close with the team. They keep on playing with fire, and I think this is the week that it kind of burns them.
And Cal, I think their offensive coordinator in it, Brian Harsin, the old Auburn coach. I'm pretty sure he's the OC out there now. They play pretty good defense at Cal. Weird thing about Virginia. Virginia's favored to win that game, by the way, I had it pulled up here a minute ago. They're favored by 5.5. The weird thing about Virginia, do you realize they're 7-1, but they're undefeated in the ACC, even though one of their losses is to North Carolina State, or their loss is to North Carolina State. Somehow the ACC was able, we've seen this before with like UNC and Wake Forest have done this, where they play a non-conference game between two ACC teams. Very strange.
I don't like that.
Nah, I don't either. My upset pick, I've got Texas Tech going down at K-State this weekend. Texas Tech 7-1, 4-1 in the Big 12. K-State 4-4, 3-2 in the Big 12. K-State's looked pretty good the last few weeks. I mean, they had a 1-point loss at Baylor, and then they've won their last two games. They really handed it to KU last week. Texas Tech, this is like one of those classic look-ahead games. Because everybody's talking about next week, hey, is this like the preview of the Big 12 championship when BYU comes to Lubbock? I think that K-State might pick them off this weekend in Manhattan.
Yeah, and I think that's a good pick, too. K-State, they're finally looking more like the team that I think a lot of people thought they'd be to start the season before that terrible, their terrible start. They're playing better. Texas Tech is kind of looking worse, and with the quarterback uncertainty, I think that's a good pick.
It's un-PC to call it this, but it's the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, Georgia and Florida, 2:30 kickoff on ABC on Saturday. Florida unranked 3-4 overall, Georgia number 5 at 6-1. Georgia, one of those teams that still could get to Atlanta. They're a 7.5-point favorite in this game. Our ratings like Georgia by 7. And this feels like a team that over the last two or three games really has kind of started to put it together.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Florida comes out in wake of,
first game without Billy Napier.
Yeah, because a lot of times teams will come out kind of playing inspired football. I mean, I think we saw that Arkansas-Tennessee in the first half.
How about Barry Lunny had the 2019 LSU team kind of on the ropes after the first quarter, and then it got away from Arkansas.
And then he had the chance to beat Missouri the next week. Not a great Missouri team, but still. This is a Georgia team that I think is playing good enough. It reminds me of the Arkansas Tennessee situation where I'm not going to pick against a team that I just think is playing well at the time. I think that they'll be able to score points on Florida and ultimately win this one. I feel like the betting line is pretty appropriate, 7-10 or somewhere in there.
I like Gunnar Stockton. He's not a great quarterback, but he's effective. Mm-hmm. He is what I would call a really good college quarterback, and he's been good for Georgia. I think Georgia wins this game pretty big. If we were picking an SEC game to watch for a possible upset, how about South Carolina at Ole Miss on Saturday, 6 o'clock kickoff on ESPN. Ole Miss ranked number 7. Everybody thinking that, hey, they've gotten through the storm. They're on their way to the playoff now. This is a South Carolina team that clearly they're not as good as people thought they were at the beginning of the season. They had Alabama on the ropes last week, and they've still got some pretty good players on that team. And Shane Beamer, say what you want to about him, November has That's been the time month. That he has had his teams play in their best. I would say if you're Ole Miss, look out this week. Ole Miss is an 11.5-point favorite in this game. Our efficiency ratings like Ole Miss by 7.
Yeah, I think it's actually going to be a really close game. You're spot on. Shane Beamer, they play well in November, and they always have that game that trips up somebody.
And it feels like Ole Miss under Kiffin has always had that game where you look back like, how did you lose that? Remember Florida last year in November? I mean, that's kind of been the thing that's kept them from really taking that step forward as a program, is that one or two head-scratching losses every year.
And if you look ahead at their schedule, I mean, it's set up for them to win out. But it's like, is it going to be South Carolina? I don't think I'm going to pick the Citadel to be the one to trip them up.
Unless Jack Crow gets in as the Rebels head coach.
But the trip up opportunities are South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi State. Three teams that I think all three are capable of being that team. But this is, like you said, the first chance for a team to really spoil their season. And it's against Beamer. In November, I'm going to pick Ole Miss just because I don't have the gut to pick South Carolina right now, but it wouldn't shock me.
Closer than that 11.5-point spread, I think. Ole Miss. I pick Ole Miss to win, but I think it could be one of those games. Again, there's three really interesting games in the SEC Saturday night, and we'll talk about OU-Tennessee here in a second. But with South Carolina, Ole Miss, OU-Tennessee, Kentucky-Auburn, where all of them have got just a little bit of intrigue where, you know, you might want to be flipping back and forth watching those games, unless you're on YouTube TV. OU is ranked number 18. Tennessee is number 14. Tennessee is a 2.5-point favorite at home in this game. This is kind of like this is an elimination game. I don't think either of these teams are going to get into the playoff ultimately, but I think as two-loss SEC teams, they're still kind of holding on to that hope of, hey, what if we get hot? What if some things happen in front of us? Whoever loses this is not getting into it. OU, our ratings like OU by a point. Now, statistically, they almost think this game is a tie. But you round up on one side, you round down on the other. OU's a one-point favorite in our efficiency ratings. Tennessee is a 2.5-point favorite in Vegas.
Yeah, I think this is a great game. I'm going to pick Tennessee just because, I don't know, I just feel like I, at this stage of the season with Tennessee and their offense, I know what I'm getting, what you get from them. Oklahoma's kind of been a mixed bag. You'll think you have them figured out, and then they'll just kind of lay an egg, I think, this year. As far as like the Texas game really got me a little bit off board with them.
Yeah,
but it's a toss up, I think. But I'm gonna pick Tennessee.
Mateer's not playing the same way that he did before the thumb injury, the surgery that he had to have earlier this season. It's a weird game because if you're looking at it from a defensive perspective, OU is way better than Tennessee. Maybe Arkansas is the only team that's worse than Tennessee defensively in the SEC this year. But Tennessee, they have that over-the-top passing attack. We saw Oklahoma struggle with that a little bit last week against Ole Miss. I'm going to say Tennessee because they're at home. But again, that's one of those that it wouldn't surprise me if it goes either way. And this will be kind of fun to watch. The efficiency ratings, because they were so close, you could actually make an argument that they say that this game is going to go to overtime. So if it goes to overtime,
yeah,
they will have said, I told you so.
And obviously, we're in year two of this game now to where it's less of a big deal because we've seen it before. But Heupel, you know he wants to win this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Venables, his old co-worker, former coach, a lot of ties in there with OU Tennessee. Now Arkansas, Mississippi State. Bulldogs 4-4, 0-4 in the SEC. Arkansas 2-6, 0-4 in the SEC. Not really the game everybody's going to be wanting to, you know, watch nationally, and that's why it ended up on SEC Network. I said I'm going to stay with this because I felt like going into this three-game stretch, Arkansas was going to win one game at home. They haven't won so far, so it's Arkansas by default.
Maybe say, oh, ye of little faith with me, but I do have little faith. I mean, I'm sorry, but which would be, is it more of a Mississippi State thing to extend your losing streak to 17 by losing to Arkansas, or is it more of an Arkansas thing to have to be the team that ends their losing streak by being their win?
I wonder if in Starkville right now they're having the same conversation and they are picking Arkansas because, like, hey, I've seen enough of Mississippi State to know that it's not going to happen.
And I'm sitting here from the Arkansas perspective. I'm going to pick that Arkansas is going to find a way to lose this game.
That's what I'm saying, though. It's like, I think that people can be so influenced by the, like, the bad things they've seen to this point. I don't know. It's just kind of just an interesting little observation.
Yeah. Well, and my thing with Arkansas, mentioned it earlier, have not seen them piece together a good performance, offense, defense, special teams. Mississippi State, I think, has been actually pretty close in some of their losses to that, it being pretty solid in all three phases. And then they'll make one play or two play. Like, I mean, then against Texas, it was the punt return touchdown.
And against Tennessee, Tennessee scored two defensive touchdowns against Mississippi State and sacked them five times. Now, I don't think Arkansas is going to do that. But Mississippi State has been that team that they've kind of shown the propensity to allow a non-offensive touchdown to change the game.
If this game is close late, it's going to be funny to see which team does the thing. Because if this is going to be – the game will be won ultimately by something, I feel like, that like one team just does wrong. Return? Yeah, something crazy that you're like, dang, how was that the play? That it's one of these teams is going to have that moment unless it's a lopsided game that we don't see coming. I'm picking Mississippi State because I have little faith that Arkansas is going to actually do it this year. Until I see it. I'm sorry, the defense looked better against Auburn, but I also think that's a large reason why is because Auburn is not very good offensively. This is a better Mississippi State offense than Arkansas faced last week. And the defense, here's the thing. Mississippi State, say what you want about them, their defense creates turnovers. Mm-hmm. And Arkansas turns the ball over. I think they lead the SEC near the top nationally in interceptions. I'm picking Mississippi State.
I'm going to Arkansas by default. By the way, ratings have Mississippi State by 6. Vegas has Arkansas by 5.5. So it seems like everybody is at odds about this game. There's just no clear consensus about who wins. Arkansas and Mississippi State, 3:00 kickoff on Saturday on SEC Network. Hopefully you'll be able to watch it, whoever your TV provider is. If you're not, tune in here. We'll have plenty of coverage at wholehogsports.com throughout the weekend. We'll talk about it on Monday. Also on Monday's show, we'll be previewing the Razorback basketball season opener against Southern that night at Bud Walton Arena. Hope to see you then or at our website. Have a great weekend, everybody.